All right, let's dive in. Today, we're journeying to India to explore the Ganga and Yamuna rivers.
Two rivers that are, well, they're more than just rivers, aren't they? They're practically deities in India, woven right into the culture and everything for thousands of years, really.
It's incredible how these rivers are almost characters in Indian mythology, you know, like they have personalities, stories, and everything.
Definitely.
Where do we even start with this? We've got a ton of sources here, historical texts, religious scriptures, even some stuff on geography and architecture.
The myths are a good place to begin. I mean, that's what gives these rivers their divine status, right? The Ganga, especially, has an amazing origin story.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, she's believed to have come down from heaven,
Oh, wow.
and her waters, they're powerful, they purify the earth. Imagine that. A river as a goddess, washing away sins and giving everyone spiritual renewal.
I'm trying to picture what it must have been like for people, like way back when, to first hear that story. This river with so much power. Like, it's awe-inspiring.
Oh, absolutely.
There's also that idea of Vishnu as Trivikrama, that dwarf who grows to govern the entire cosmos.
Right. It's almost like a very early connection to that vastness and power that we associate with the Ganga, you know?
So we've got the Ganga representing this huge celestial force. What about the Yamuna? Does she have an equally impressive entrance?
Oh, she does. The Yamuna is often seen as the daughter of Surya, the sun god. It gives her that solar connection, which is a nice contrast to the Ganga's more celestial vibe, wouldn't you say?
Celestial and solar. It's like they're these fundamental forces of the universe almost.
Exactly. And then, of course, you have Krishna, the eighth avatar of Vishnu. He's super connected to the Yamuna. It really shows how much these rivers are intertwined with Hindu beliefs. They're not just background scenery, they're active participants in all these huge stories.
So they're revered, they're practically characters in these divine stories. And speaking of sacred, I've always been fascinated by the Tirthas, the sacred fords or crossing places along these rivers. What makes them so special?
Well, tirthas are believed to be these spots where the line between the earthly and the divine is kind of thin.
Like a portal almost.
Exactly. It's believed that if you bathe in the river at one of these tirthas, you can wash away sins and gain like incredible spiritual merit.
Which is probably why millions of people go to the Kumbh Mela, right? That massive pilgrimage where everyone bathes at the meeting point of the Ganga, Yamuna, and the mythical Sarasvati River.
Exactly. Picture this. Entire cities popping up just for a little while, filled with millions of devotees, all drawn to the power of these rivers and this promise of spiritual purification. It's pretty amazing.
You're really painting a picture here. I'm trying to grasp the sheer scale of it. And are there any particularly famous tirthas along these rivers? I mean, you said they're all over the place, right?
Oh, yeah, tons. On the Ganga, you've got Haridwar, which is known as the gateway to the gods.
I've never heard of that.
And then there's Allahabad, where the three rivers meet. And along the Yamuna, you have Mathura, the birthplace of Krishna. Each tirtha has its own story, its own significance.
It sounds like it. And it's not just about the act of bathing, is it? It's like these rivers are woven into the very fabric of Indian culture.
Oh, totally. They're more than just revered, they're personified as goddesses, worshipped and celebrated in festivals and rituals. You see them everywhere: music, dance, literature, even just everyday life.
It's like the Ganga Dussehra festival, right? The 10-day celebration of the Ganga's descent to Earth.
Yes. And even something simple, like offering diyas, little oil lamps, to the river, it speaks volumes about how deeply connected people are to these waters.
That's beautiful. This reverence for the river in everyday life. It makes me think about the architecture along the banks, too. All those temples, ghats, and palaces. Wouldn't you say they were inspired by the rivers themselves?
Oh, absolutely. We see all these architectural styles from over centuries, reflecting the devotion and artistry. The Mughal influence is pretty noticeable, especially during Akbar and Shah Jahan's time.
The Taj Mahal comes to mind. Such an iconic structure right on the banks of the Yamuna.
It is. But going back a bit, within the Agra Fort, where Shah Jahan was later imprisoned by his own son, there's this beautiful mosque, the Modi Masjid, the Pearl Mosque. It's made entirely of white marble, and it kind of echoes this earlier mosque that Shah Jahan had built in Ajmer. It's a stunning example of Mughal architecture, inspired by the beauty of the river.
So much grandeur and beauty inspired by these rivers. But they're not just scenery, are they? I mean, they're the lifeblood of this huge area, the Indo-Gangetic Plain, right?
Their geographical significance is, well, it's huge. They've nurtured agriculture, helped with trade, and shaped the whole landscape. For millennia, civilizations have thrived along their banks.
It's amazing how these waters have sustained so many people for so long. Can you tell us a bit more about the rivers themselves, their journey from the Himalayas?
Okay, so picture this. The Ganga starts high up in the Himalayas, fed by glacial meltwater.
Wow.
And then it carves its way down through the mountains, gathering more and more water from tributaries along the way. And then finally, it reaches the Bay of Bengal.
It's a long journey.
It is. The Yamuna is similar. It also starts in the Himalayas, and then it joins the Ganga at Allahabad. And together, they create this super fertile and densely populated plain.
It's a reminder of how everything's connected, you know, from the tallest mountains to the ocean.
It really is. But with that interconnectedness comes some challenges. These rivers, once pristine, they're facing so much pressure. Pollution, deforestation, overuse.
It's almost like India's lifeblood is facing its own mortality, in a way.
And in turn, the rivers threaten human life, too. Take the Kosi River, for example. It's a tributary of the Ganga, and it's known as the Sorrow of Bihar.
Oh, I've heard of that.
It's infamous for its devastating floods, and its course is constantly shifting. It's a real problem.
It's a tragic irony, isn't it? This balance between providing life and causing destruction makes you wonder how we can balance the sacred with the practical. How do we keep the spiritual significance of these rivers while also making sure they're ecologically sustainable?
It's the big question, isn't it? And it has repercussions way beyond India. It speaks to our relationship with water everywhere.
You're right. It's not just an isolated issue.
Not at all. So we want you to think about your own connection to water as you listen to this. What about the rivers and lakes where you are? What are they up against? What challenges do they face?
We need to be more mindful, more aware of our impact, and more responsible in our actions, don't we?
We do. And maybe, just maybe, by understanding that deep connection between the Ganga and Yamuna and the people of India, we can find ways to better protect our own waterways.
Now that's a powerful thought, a call to action for all of us.
It is. And you know, this tension between the sacred and the practical, it has political undercurrents too.
Oh, right. I mean, whoever controls water resources has always had power, haven't they?
Exactly. Historically, empires and kingdoms have risen and fallen based on their access to water. And in India today, with a growing population and the need for more water for things like farming and industry, managing these rivers has become a really complex political issue.
So it's not just about mythology and spirituality. We're talking about real-world things, economic development, the survival of entire communities.
Exactly. For example, sharing water resources between different states in India. Figuring out who gets how much water from the Ganga and Yamuna, it's led to some tough negotiations, treaties, and even disagreements.
It's a reminder that even something as seemingly eternal as a river can become a point of contention when resources are limited.
It really does. It underscores the need for cooperation, for finding ways to share these precious waters fairly and sustainably.
It's a complex problem with no easy solutions. But I think what we've done today is show just how much these rivers mean to India.
Absolutely. They're way more than just geographical features. They're the lifeblood of a civilization, woven into its myths, its beliefs, its art, its very identity.
And they're a reflection of our own relationship with the natural world.
Yeah.
A reminder that we need to find that harmony between our needs and the needs of the planet.
Perhaps that's the most important thing we can take away from our exploration today. The Ganga and Yamuna are like a microcosm of the bigger challenges we face in a world dealing with environmental damage and scarcity of resources.
They show us that our actions have consequences and that we need to be careful, respectful, and reverent if we want to preserve this delicate balance in nature.
A river, after all, is more than just water flowing between banks. It's a symbol of life itself, a testament to how everything is connected.
And as we've seen today, the Ganga and Yamuna, they tell a story that spans thousands of years, covering myth and history, spirituality and politics, beauty and struggle.
And it's a story that's still unfolding. We all have a role to play in shaping how it continues.
So what does all this mean for you, dear listener? Why should these rivers so far away matter to you?
Well, whether we realize it or not, we're all connected to water. It's the source of life. And our relationship with it, how we value it, use it, and protect it, it's fundamental to our well-being.
It's true. Every sip we take, every shower, every product we use, it's all connected to water in some way.
Exactly. And the challenges facing the Ganga and Yamuna, pollution, overuse, climate change, these are challenges faced by rivers all over the world.
It's a global issue, not just something happening in India.
Exactly. So as you listen to this, we encourage you to think about your own connection to water. Think about the rivers and lakes in your own area. What challenges are they facing? How can you, in your own way, contribute to protecting them?
It's about becoming more mindful, more aware of the impact we have, and more responsible in what we do.
Absolutely. And it's about recognizing how profoundly interconnected we all are. Just as the Ganga and Yamuna flow from the Himalayas to the sea, connecting mountains to plains, we're all connected to each other and to the natural world.
We're all part of the same story, the same big narrative.
And it's a story that's still being written. The choices we make today as individuals and together will decide how the story goes.
So, to wrap up our deep dive, we'll leave you with this thought. What will your contribution be to the story of water? How will you make sure future generations inherit rivers that aren't just lifelines, but also sources of wonder, inspiration, and spiritual renewal, just like the Ganga and Yamuna have been for thousands of years?
Go explore, learn more, and let your journey begin. You know, when you think about it, those tirthas we talked about, they're not just places for spiritual cleansing. They're tied into the actual geography and history of these rivers.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about it like that before. It's like those tirthas are where the myths and reality meet.
Exactly. Like Haridwar, for instance. It's right where the Ganga comes down from the Himalayas into the plains. It's no accident. It's seen as a gateway to the gods.
It's like the land itself has this sacred meaning.
And the tirthas, they become these hubs for people, for pilgrimages, festivals, trade, even politics, like little snapshots of Indian society.
It's amazing how these rivers have shaped so much, not just the land, but the culture and society too. And you mentioned before how controlling water has always been about power.
Absolutely. Throughout history, whoever controlled the Ganga and Yamuna, they controlled trade, agriculture, basically all the prosperity, the rise and fall of empires and kingdoms. It all revolved around these rivers.
So we're not just talking about myths and spirituality. It's real-world power dynamics, too.
Right. And those dynamics are still at play today. In modern India, with the population growing and the need for water increasing, managing these rivers is a really complex political issue.
Makes sense. With so many people relying on these rivers, there are bound to be tensions.
Yeah, definitely. Deciding how to allocate water resources between different states, it's led to some pretty intense negotiations, even disputes.
Do you have an example of how this actually plays out?
Sure. In the 1990s, there was a big disagreement between the states of Karnataka and Tamil Nadu over sharing water from the Kaveri River. While it's not one of the rivers we're focusing on today, it shows how real these tensions are around water rights in India.
So even though these rivers are revered as goddesses, they're still subject to these human struggles over resources.
It's a perfect example of that push and pull between the sacred and the practical. And it really highlights the need for everyone to cooperate and manage things sustainably so these rivers can keep providing for the millions who depend on them.
It's like we're constantly trying to find that balance between reverence and responsibility.
Mm.
We see these rivers as sacred, but we also have to protect them for the future.
That's it, exactly. Which takes us back to that question we asked before. How can we, as individuals and as a global community, be better caretakers of these essential resources?
It's a question that goes beyond just the Ganga and Yamuna. It's about our relationship with water everywhere.
Exactly. Think about the rivers and lakes in your area. What's happening to them? Are they dealing with pollution, overuse, or climate change?
It's easy to feel overwhelmed by how big the problem is.
I get that. But even small things can make a difference. Conserving water at home, supporting groups working to protect waterways, even just learning about what your local rivers are facing, it all adds up.
It's about changing how we think, isn't it? Moving from feeling entitled to feeling responsible.
Exactly. We need to see ourselves not as owners of these rivers, but as caretakers, as stewards.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And it's something that's deeply ingrained in Indian culture,
yeah. That
idea of living in harmony with nature. Maybe there's a lesson in there for all of us.
I think so. The Ganga and Yamuna remind us that we're all connected to each other and to the natural world. And what we do, it affects not just us, but future generations.
So, as we wrap up our deep dive into the world of the Ganga and Yamuna, we leave you with this thought. What will you do for the story of water? What choices will you make to ensure that these essential resources are protected and cherished for generations to come?
Let's work together to make sure future generations inherit rivers that aren't just essential for life, but also sources of wonder and inspiration, just like the Ganga and Yamuna have been for thousands of years.
And this has been quite a journey, exploring the Ganga and Yamuna, these rivers that are so deeply connected to the heart of India.
It really has. From the Himalayas, where they begin, all the way to the plains and the cities they support, we've gone from ancient myths to the complexities of managing them today.
We've seen how they've inspired incredible architecture and personal acts of devotion, and we've faced the challenges they're up against, challenges that many rivers around the world share.
It's been a deep dive in every sense of the word. And as we wrap up, I'm left feeling a real sense of awe and a renewed appreciation for how connected everything is.
Me too. I've been thinking a lot about my own relationship with water and how we all rely on these precious resources, whether we realize it or not.
And that's what we were hoping you'd think about too as you listen. Because the story of the Ganga and Yamuna isn't just about two rivers in India. It's a story about our relationship with the natural world everywhere.
So as we end our deep dive, we want to leave you with one final thought. It's something we've talked about, but it's worth repeating. What will your contribution be to the story of water?
How will you ensure that future generations inherit rivers that are more than just sources of life? Rivers that are sources of wonder, inspiration, and spiritual renewal.
Will you be a caretaker of these resources? Will you make choices to conserve water, protect waterways, and support sustainable practices?
The choices we make now, individually and together, will shape how this story goes. And the Ganga and Yamuna, with their ancient wisdom and enduring beauty, they can be our guides.
So explore, learn more, and let the journey begin.